Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The art of printmaking is one of the oldest and noblest, as well as the most interesting forms of the visual arts. Today we meet one of the founders of a group devoted to sharing this old technology and art genre with a new generation of digital natives. Joseph Velasquez is a printmaker and co-founder of Drive-By Press. Drive-By Press is a portable print shop, if you will, located, in this case, the back of a Jeep Liberty. Over the past 7 years, they've traveled over 200,000 miles, presenting woodblock printing demonstrations, creating custom designs, and printing T-shirts at colleges and universities, summer workshops, even on rock and roll tours. Drive-By Press will be a part of the First Friday Art Crawl in the Brady District tonight from 4 to 9. They'll be appearing at the new Zero Center, the University of Tulsa's newest arts facility in the Brady District. Joseph Velasquez is a printmaker originally from Austin, Texas. He was educated at the University of Wisconsin, where he came up with this idea of Drive-By Press. He's the co-founder of the Dirty Printmakers of America. He's a curator at the Slingshot Gallery in Madison, Wisconsin, and today spends most of his time creating his own original designs and sharing this technology with a new generation. Joseph Velasquez is my guest today. Joseph Velasquez, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks, Rich. Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Drive-By Press. How did this get started?
Drive-By Press got started while myself and my colleague Greg Nanny were in graduate school. It was a thesis project for us, and it was our emphasis to kind of bring printmaking out of the basement and into the general public's eye. We wanted to show this what we call the democratization of art, of accessibility. We had been directly in response to contemporary, like, economic issues of who is actually buying art, who is actually being shown art, and who was our demographic that we were bringing our art to. In the print process, it was, you know, created for the middle class. It was created for the lower class. It wasn't created for the social elite, because its idea of, you know, many coming from one. We were aware of the print history, but we're also aware of the immobility of printmaking. We're talking about, you know, 2-ton presses, you know, enormous mechanical beasts that are kept in basements at universities. And we really wanted to mobilize that, to take it out to the general public around the upper Midwest that didn't have visiting artist programs, schools that didn't have printmaking programs. And Wisconsin having one of the strongest, we had learned advanced techniques. We had learned the history of printmaking, and we wanted to show that to the public. So we took it on us to let's go to these places. Let's go to community outreach. Let's start showing people what we do and showing what other artists around the country are doing. And our thesis project consisted of 13 schools we had submitted through our committee to let us take off. So we got to leave Wisconsin in the dead of winter, which I was so gracious, because I'm from Austin, Texas, and a Texas boy, I'd only seen the snow in a Thomas Kinkade painting. So to actually experience the snow in real life in Wisconsin, the romance was over really quick. Right? So when we had mobilized after the 13 schools we had visited, many artists, many printmakers from our country had heard what we were doing, and they started sending us prints. And before, when we started, we had about 25 prints. Now we have a collection of over 2,000 contemporary prints that have been made within the last 5 to 8 years. And not only did we surpass the 13 schools, when we got back at the end of that tour to wrap up our thesis project, we then had emails from over 120 different colleges and universities wanting us to come out. So Greg and I kind of looked at each other and said, well, we were wondering what we were going to do after grad school, so I guess it's the life of an art carny. And from that point on till today, we have traveled over 230,000 miles across the United States, visiting over 200 different colleges and universities. And Tulsa here makes 201.
All right. And in fact, you have a press in the back of a car.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now we've kind of expanded. Now we actually have a total of 4 presses, and we have 2 vehicles, both outfitted with presses.
Now, see, this strikes me as something like, you know, how film has been democratized by digital technology. You know, audio recording's been the same way, digital technology that's mm-hmm. out cheap. All of a sudden you can convert a spare bedroom into a studio, and all of a sudden you can make a record, or, you know, you can make a film with digital equipment pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. It seems like the same is happening with printmaking too.
It is. It has become more accessible. And what's really wild about this process is when we take it and we show it to the general public, they see the woodblocks. I mean, we print woodblocks on T-shirts. It's not the same as screen printing. And when people see the process, they get that immediately. When we do events like art walks, like we're doing this evening, You get a public that has seen and is aware of screen printing, but they have never seen this process with the woodcut. And the kids today that come up, these are kids that have grown up with Photoshop, with digital manipulation abilities, kids that have, you know, grow up away from the handmade, and they're more about the digital made. So to them, it's an odd juxtaposition when they come up and they see a woodblock that someone hand-carved. And they did not use Photoshop to make it. Like, no computers were harmed or used in our process is one of the things that we claim. But when kids see that, it speaks directly to their soul. And they say, wait a minute, you sat there with your hand and you carved that out. What if you mess up? And it's like, well, you can't. There's no backspace. There's no control Z. If you miscut on a woodcut, that's exactly where it's going to be, right?
It becomes kindling.
So when the kids see that, they recognize it immediately. So it wasn't like it's a susceptible audience. So sometimes it wouldn't be a susceptible audience. It'd be an unknowing public that would come up and encounter us. And it was through that opportunity and doing this out in the public that we first engaged with a couple of indie rock bands. And a few years ago, we started touring with the indie rock band out of Austin named Spoon. And we actually rode in the tour bus with them, took our giant press into the rock venues. And we toured around the United States with this
band. So you're making tour t-shirts right there in front of people.
And riding in the tour bus with the band. And it was just a surreal experience for Greg and I not to have to drive anymore. And we're meeting a brand new audience every trip. Like I said, we started off going to schools. We started off going to community centers, educational outreach. And then it really broadened once we started hitting the rock venues.
You've touched on something I think that's really interesting. This idea of this very old technology that's been around for hundreds of years. A lot of times we say old technology, obsolete. In fact, it's finding a new audience because of that handmade nature of it and the fact that there's no reset button. There's no, you know, dry erase. There's no, you know, none of this stuff. It's exactly, and it has a new appeal to this audience that's used to touching a button and everything goes back to normal.
Exactly.
The undo button, if you will.
And that's something that the audience, that we, you know, we can see their perspective from it, and they get it, and it's away from screen printing. Everyone who has had a printed t-shirt knows that it was screen printed, and we have people walking up and they don't know what it is, but they'll comment, they'll say, I don't know what this is, but I know it's not screen printing. And we're like, you're exactly right. And then, did you invent this process? And I'm like, Greg, afraid this is like one of the first graphic arts in the history of man. This is the process that inspired the Renaissance. This is what enabled books to be reprinted by the thousands when a time in the world in the 1400s when 1% of the population could read. This is what created the knowledge of explosion. And it's this antiquated machine that we drive around in our car in this digital age of Facebook, Twitter, and social networking that we live in. It's this antiquated piece of machinery that still has a place in today's society, and it still has a great reaction from the people.
So for, you're right, people can tell the difference, but for those who, you know, we're talking on the radio, what is the difference between a, you know, silk screen print or just a screen print versus this woodcut etching made on a, say, a t-shirt, for example, or on a poster or on some sort of media?
Well, one of the things that it immediately tears it away or separates the two is the amount that can be proliferated from each of the process. Screen printed shirts or screen printed materials can be done by the thousands, if not by the millions. And it is digitally reprinted. I mean, you have to use computers. You know, you can hand do it, but no one really does that.
It's not anymore.
Not anymore. That definitely went away in the 70s. But it's manipulated by a computer in order to make the screen. With a wood block, you have wear that occurs. Edges become beveled. There's a life, and there's only so many, which makes what we do, it has an additional number to where once it reaches that point, it's exhausted and it no longer has line fidelity.
Of course, when you're doing an art print, I mean, that's sort of the interesting part about it. When you do a run of 100, say, or 150, maybe 200, you start seeing that difference.
Right. You start seeing that derivation from the beginning. Like I said, the line fidelity starts to change. And the difference with the woodblock is, for those that don't know, it's basically in the same principle of a giant stamp. But the force in which it takes to transfer the surface of ink onto the printed material is about 1,500 pounds of pressure per square inch. Screen printing doesn't require any type of actual pressure for a press.
It's almost like a Xerox machine in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very similar in that. I mean, you just go and it's a, you pull your hand and next thing you know, it's done. With the woodblock, people can actually see we have to labor. And that's something that really attracted the general public when we were touring with the bands, is the kids up at Webster Hall in New York would see us rolling the ink with a rolling pin onto the surface of the block. They'd see us set the t-shirt down on the press. They'd see us get the woodblock, put it down on the press, and then crank the press, and they would see it, and they would say, how much pressure is that? We tell them, it's like an elephant wearing a high heel that's stepping on it all the way across the block. And kids will say, well, what happens if you get your finger smashed in? It was like, well, it'll pop like a hot dog in a microwave. You don't want to do that. Keep your hands away. I mean, there's no risk. You don't have that in screen printing. You don't have that constant risk. With woodcut, you can cut yourself. You're in the press, you can smash yourself. We've lost fingernails. It happens, but... It's the danger element that I think attracts the people as well. But there's also the way that the ink sits on the fabric. On a screen print, people can't have something large on it. You'll feel this big plastic, especially here in Oklahoma. If you have something large printed on your shirt, you're going to sweat quite a bit behind it.
Right.
With the woodcut, it actually binds. The ink binds with the fabric. So it actually, because of the press, it becomes one with the fabric. And people will ask us, will this wash out? And we're like, no, this is oil-based ink that we're using is the same ink that's on museum walls from the 1400s. The same ink that was used to print Gutenberg's Bible is the same ink that we make for our t-shirts. So the t-shirts will last. It's 100% cotton t-shirts. Most of our museum works are painted on 100% cotton duck canvas. They're going to last forever. So are our shirts. So it's actually a nice little piece that survives, and so it'll be something. Hey, this was my papaw's shirt when he got in Tulsa. So.
That's right. Well, today you'll be at the Zero Center at the new University of Tulsa building downtown in the Brady Arts District as part of the First Friday Arts Crawl. My guest is Joseph Velasquez, a member of the Drive-By Press. He is also a curator at the Slingshot Gallery in Madison, Wisconsin, and he and his partners have been doing this Drive-By Press for what, almost 7-8 years now, I guess.
Coming up on eight on your anniversary.
Yeah, yeah. And so what will you have out in the Brady District this evening? You'll have a Honda Element, is that right?
Yeah, this time we'll have our Jeep Liberty we have out. We'll have our press out. In order to give us more room, we brought extra blocks. And we had spoken with our organizer to help us make this happen. I want to give special thanks to Michelle Martin. She's the printmaking instructor here at Tulsa. And she instructed us that, hey, this was going to be a brand new opportunity here at the center, and we wanted to have drive-by. So we brought more blocks out than we usually do. And then I brought out some of my large-scale woodblock prints. And so we're going to display that. We're going to have the shirts. We're going to be printing live shirts, but we're also going to be printing on paper. And it's one of my things is I love for the kids to come, and we'll ink up the block. We'll set the paper on the block, and then I let the kids crank the press. And it's an ephemeral activity that really sticks with the kids. It's one thing to buy a T-shirt, but it's one thing to help print it. And
when
the kids see that action, it sticks with them. And whenever I lift the block off the shirt, and you can see the magic, when the kids see the image on the block and the image on the shirt, and they immediately get that. This came from that. And you can see those little epiphanies go off like fireworks on a little mind. That's something special. So we're going to be doing a lot of that.
Now, I'm going to ask a dumb question. Is woodblock, are you carving in negative? In the negative image?
Well, actually, we're carving out all the negative space in it, and we're inking up the positive.
Okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, etching is reverse, right?
Yeah, etching's a little bit different because etching is actually going to go into the line. You know,
yeah.
That's the intaglio process. It's going under the surface, and it's the line itself that we're inking. So the relief is just quite the opposite, and the line is actually raised.
Well, I think that's really cool where you kind of see that negative image.
Right. Both processes, you have to flip it, and so any text that we write, we have to write backwards, and you have to, it sometimes can be a nightmare if you spend 16 hours on a block and you realize, oh no, my E is backwards. So that does happen.
Well, so you'll have a whole bunch of prints. Now, do you make prints, like a new design while you're there in the evening? Or?
Well, we have some that we've just made because of the process and the time that it takes.
Yeah, it takes a while to do a woodcut, right?
Right, but we have made some brand new blocks specifically for this event. So there will be a couple of blocks that we're debuting specifically for this event. And we'll have hand burnishers, and we'll have some assistants out there helping us. So if someone wanted to come and get something on paper and do it themselves, we will have a couple of activities set up. So even for the general public that just doesn't have money to buy the t-shirts, I want people to be able to walk away with something, because that's been the mission of Drive-By, is this whole accessibility and democratization of art. So it's not always about just turning the dime as much as it is about turning the knowledge about what we're doing.
Now, you think you've made any difference as far as the visibility of printmaking? I mean, certainly printmaking is coming. There's this new renaissance, I think, about it. You know, it's sort of this make movement. It's a big part of that, where people are wanting to do something with their hands as opposed to thinking with a computer or designing with a computer.
Yeah, that's been one of the things. Like, we haven't received, like, accolades for our endeavors or anything. We have been quoted by some of the print publishers as being like the Lewis and Clark of printmaking. We've been called like print missionaries, and you know, we don't look for that, but one of the things that we look, and it's hard to measure about the degree of your voice or how much that we've reached an audience, but we have received hundreds of emails from kids about, you know, thanking us for the artists that we bring. Many of the, on our travels, we're collecting prints everywhere we go. So when we go to a school, we give a lecture about contemporary printmaking, and we share those prints that we had just picked up. So we're sharing artists that aren't in magazines, artists that aren't in books, and kids get to see that immediacy and get to turn that around. And then, you know, there's been countless number of kids that have kind of copied drive-by, not in a negative sense, in a positive sense, with letter pressing and mobile printmaking and being educationally outreaching. And that to us is a great measure of influence. That's something that we like to hang our hat on.
Now, will you work with a local artist when you come through a community, like somebody who's already doing prints, and they'll maybe bring some of their work?
Yeah, we've have artists like come up all the time, and they'll see what we're doing, and they're like, oh my gosh, I have a woodblock at my house, I don't have it pressed. Can I run and get it and come back? I'd love to print this on this. I've never seen anybody print on fabric. And we're like, hurry, you have an hour. We'll be here. So, yeah, we welcome that.
That's cool. My guest today, Joseph Velasquez, is a member of Drive By Press, one of the co-founders of it. They'll be appearing today from 4 to 9 at the Zero Center as a part of the First Friday Art Crawl in the Brady District. And this will mark the first Friday for the Zero Center, brand new open building, which is going to feature a lot of community art aspects. So it's probably very apropos that you guys are as a part of this first event. Well, just let me talk a little bit about your own work. You're wearing, I believe it is one of your designs.
Yes, it is.
And it's La Lucha, you know, the masked Mexican wrestler. And this is a big theme in your work. Well, what is the attraction of the Lucha?
Well, the Lucha comes from, well, this first influence upon me comes from my grandparents. My grandfather ran a dance hall called the Nat Ballroom. And on the Fridays and Saturday nights, on Friday nights he held for, it was basically mainly the Chicano and Mexican acts on Friday. And on Saturday nights he would host like the Black Motown acts. So, and then they had a print shop in the upstairs where they would create the playbills for them. And then on Sundays, my grandfather would host Mexican wrestling matches. And it would be people like old, and there's probably people here in Oklahoma that would really recognize some of these artists, but like the Funk family and like the Von Erichs.
Yeah, those guys came through Tulsa too. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I figured they would. And those were like people that my grandfather knew, and he had hosted them. And then I grew up finding the old playbills. I grew up finding the posters and pictures and with my grandfather and the old plates and the blocks. And that had a profound influence on me. And the use of the mask that I use now in my artwork is, I'm in love with the graphic image of the Mexican wrestler. But I also like the use of it when I use in my own fine art for the idea of the metaphor that it attaches with the struggle. Or who, you know, we all can wear masks at times. And one of the things my grandfather would tell me, because something that upset me when I was a kid, he took me to go see a Mexican wrestler by the name of El Santo. And when I seen him, the guy was 6'2", 260 pounds, and he was just muscles everywhere. 3 weeks later, we saw him. He was 5'10", 240, and he had a pot belly like my Uncle Frankie. And I said, Grandpa, that's not him. This guy's a fraud. And my grandfather pulled me up on his knee, and he said, no, son, it's not about who's wearing the mask. It's who they are when they're wearing it. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And it's something that resonated with me throughout. And I like the idea of the metaphor. So in my own fine art, I use that as a metaphor, whether it be for an intention, for the idea, or who's wearing it.
You know, the mask. There's been other artists that use this idea of the Lucha. I think of Ed Paschke, who's also had an Oklahoma ties, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, using the idea of this Lucha to sort of denote mystery of you know, hiding your true self. So it's a really cool image, and it's interesting that it tends to appeal to artists,
right?
Because it's, you know, it is you know, it's you know, once you grow up, it's sort of a kitschy art form.
Yeah.
The whole idea of Lucha wrestling,
it's one of the things that, like, even as a kid, as a young boy, that's one of the things that resonated with us, is like, you know,
Young it's boys, good versus right. evil, you know?
Right. It was that great dichotomy of the either side. And then to be able to wear the mask and be interchangeable, and the whole thing is during the match is to take the mask off. That was like one of the most things you could not don't
that was
do.
That was worse than getting beat. Right,
yeah.
Well, so that's a big image in your work. And, mm-hmm. and then there's also a very dark side to your work, too.
Yeah, there's some, you know, the skulls and stuff that I have in my work are often perceived as being the dark. And in growing up as a Chicano artist and...
Well, that's part of the, you know, the Day of the Dead.
And exactly.
I mean, this is, it's part of the imagery of religion, of, mm-hmm. of life and death, and it being part of a sort of getting to the Disney circle of life.
Right, yes. And that's exactly like my impetus or like my starting point when I use that. It's... And oftentimes as fine artists, one of the things you're told to do, your foundation is to go with what you know. What is your foundation? Where is your you know, your society around you, your culture? What has been around? And those are the visual elements that I grew up with. My grandmother making altars, growing up and living for a time in Southern California and seeing the murals, responding to the murals, copying them when I was a little kid. And at the age of like 13 and 14, beginning to tattoo on my cousins and engrave on the back of their windshield, you know, with the little Dremel engraver of the praying hands that I seen a picture of, and I thought I had perfected it. And little did I know that Albrecht Dürer made it in the 1470s. And here I was 15, like saying, that guy copied me. But I had a long way to go in learning, but that came to fruition. But, you know, responding to the culture around me and making those are my foundations. And my use of the dark imagery, like I said, it's more of a celebration of it and not necessarily in a macabre kind of manner in it. More about understanding about this idea of not to be Disney kitsch, but this idea of circle of life, of not mourning the loss, but celebrating a life.
Mm. Now, it sounds like from what you described, you knew you wanted to be a printmaker pretty early.
I don't think I had a choice in the matter. I think it was kind of predestined to a path that I just like.
Why do you think you didn't have a choice?
I just think that some of the things, you know, life has a funny way of putting certain obstacles to negotiate in front of you.
It sounds like... You know, from that dance hall you were talking about, that, you know, poster art is such a big part of that. You know, I mean, that's in those days, that's how you got a crowd.
Right.
It was not buying advertising or Facebooking or anything like that. It was art.
Yeah, it was that bringing it to the people, and that's what my grandfather did. And the performance. I mean, the performance nature of the wrestling match, the performance nature of what we do live with Drive-By Press. It's a form of entertainment for us. It's better than being on the side of sitting at a table and showing your work when you can actually be there making it. And so you're taking the studio out. You're kind of recontextualizing the way that people see art made. And that's something that, you know, like I said, in the beginning of seeing my grandfather's place and having those performers, and then in the sense of us printing like we are going to be printing this evening, it is a performance as well.
Does that add something to your work, do you think? Because, you know, a lot of times the artists, especially a printmaker, you're sitting squirreled away somewhere with a big press and you're pretty much by yourself with your assistants coming up with designs and the like, and having that sort of immediacy of a performance, as you said.
Exactly. I think most artists, that's one thing that Greg and I used to comment constantly on about being in Drive-By Press is, you know, we were on the road quite a bit, traveling these thousands of miles, and we didn't have a studio to go to make our place. We were making our studio was the Motel 6 that we were staying at that night, leaving wood chips on the floor and a $20 bill on the pillow and apology note to the maid. But we had to make it. And the difference was is that we got to make a woodcut that night, debut it the next day, and get a response from a public. Where your normal studio artist will make something and you have to wait 6 to 8 months for an opening to show people what you have done. And so there is a lag. And then with us making it, we had an immediate response, and that did have an effect on our art.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. That's almost like an actor who in a live play versus a film.
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. you shape your performance. You try not to be too influenced by an audience, but it you know it has to have an influence on how you do everything. Mm-hmm. Versus a movie where it's one guy staring at you, okay, that's good enough, move on.
Right.
And it's the same sort of deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can take, you know, take after retake after retake as, you know, a film actor, but a theater actor, you get one shot and the audience is there watching you and you have to roll with the punches. And with us, when we're printing live, if something is erroneous or something bad happens, We got to say, you know, you got to save face. You can't just like, oh, don't look at this. Don't pretend like this didn't happen. You have to roll with it. You have to understand it and you address it. And you can't act like it didn't happen because it does. I mean, there are – it's part of the dance and the beauty of making art, especially with printmaking. As much as you want to lead, you often have to follow.
Now, in your own work, when you're creating prints and the like, is it like a stage actor where you have a theme – you're sort of honing it, you're changing things very slowly, or as you're creating a print, is it always a brand new experience, a brand new theme, a brand new imagery? How does it work for you?
For myself, I like to work in suites. For me, I think one image works as a line in a paragraph of a poem. I put it in the same way, to where the lines, when put together, it has a strong paragraph. So when I take a group of five or six images and I put them together, then when put together, they can stand alone. But when you put them together, it has such a stronger, and you can see what the artist's intent. I think sometimes with other artists, you can try to put too much into one particular image when it can really be broken up into sections to, you know, be stronger. And that's one way that I approach it. I work thematically for a suite or a series.
I like the idea of a suite or a series, a suite. But at some point, we put that suite aside and start a new one.
Exactly. And I'm influenced by, you know, big time in popular culture. My girlfriend hates it, but I start my day listening to NPR and I'm reading the Huffington Post or, you know, and like that's
well, she needs to get over it.
Because that's my heavy influence. I mean, that's my connection to the world and being able to respond. There's so much going on. There's so much for artists today to comment on. And being a part of that is the aim, is having a voice within that conversation.
All right. Well, we should mention that Drive-By Press will be back in Oklahoma in just a couple of weeks, right? You're doing your big summer workshop in Oklahoma at the University of Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's right. The University of Oklahoma in Norman, we have a Drive-By Press workshop. You can visit our Drive-By Press webpage at www.drivebypress.com. There's a link that goes directly to it. It's 2 weeks. 10 days.
And you're doing every form of printmaking known, probably.
Exactly. Yeah, and there they have a 5 foot by 10 foot press, and so we're going to be emphasizing large scale wood blocks. So 4 foot by 6 foot large wood blocks is what we're going to be printing. But we'll also be teaching screen printing.
That's a lot of chipping.
It is. You just make bigger lines, so we'll get away faster.
All right. Well, you can learn more at drivebypress.com.
Yes.
And tonight, from 4 to 9 at the Zero Center, you can see Drive-By Press doing their thing, making T-shirts, making prints, as a part of the First Friday Art Crawl in the Brady District. Joseph, it was a pleasure talking with you. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much, Rich.
Printmaker Joseph Velasquez speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He is a founding member of Drive-By Press, which will be appearing today at the First Friday Art Crawl in the Brady District from 4 to 9 at the new Zero Center for Arts and Education located at the corner of North Cheyenne and Brady Street. You can learn more about Drive-By Press at drivebypress.com. Also be a first opportunity to see the new Zero Center in the Brady District, which features art studios, gallery space, as well as classrooms for art students at the University of Tulsa. Also, as a part of the Arts Crawl, Living Arts of Tulsa will be premiering a new exhibit, Translationships, an interactive art exhibition of relationships between technology, language, and experience. The artist is Ashley John Pickford, a professor of visual communications at the University of Delaware, and his work examines the intersection between art, text, and design. Information on that at livingarts.org. It's all part of the First Friday Arts Crawl tonight in the Brady District. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.